I'm Susan Yawkey with VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Coming up, activists say Syrian rebels have captured the provincial governor of Raqqa. The UAE tries 94 people for an alleged coup plot. The vice president says the U.S. position on Iran's nuclear ambitions is clear.
It is to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon, period.
And a gay documentary makes inroads in Turkey. It's all ahead. Syrian activists say rebels have captured the governor of the northern province of Raqqa after largely pushing government forces from the area's capital city. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said today the fighters seized Hassan Jalili, calling him the highest-ranking official to be captured since the uprising against President Bashar al-Assad began. The rebels took control of large parts of Raqqa city on Monday, but activists say clashes continue in some areas of the provincial capital. The city is on the Euphrates River, about 80 kilometers south of Turkey. VOA's Michael Lippin spoke about the significance of Raqqa with Joshua Landis at the University of Oklahoma.
Raqqa is a very important town, of course, on the road to Qamishli and Hasakeh and Deir ez-Zor, out in the eastern Jazeera area, which is the major farming area. It's a major oil-producing region. It's the road leading from Aleppo to the east. And Raqqa is right next to the Assad Lake and all these areas where our oil, electricity producing on the Euphrates River.
What's the sectarian makeup of the population in Raqqa?
Well, Raqqa is a Sunni region. It's a Bedouin Sunni region. There are Kurds in certain areas. And there are some Christians sprinkled about that fled from Turkey during the First World War, some Christian towns. But there are some Circassians. There's a little smattering of different stuff up near the border with Turkey, but not important. This is a Sunni Arab region. It's been very faithful to the Ba'ath Party throughout the years, but it's been extremely poor and underprivileged. It's not gotten a lot from the state. It hoped that the building of Assad Dam along the Euphrates River would bring a lot of irrigation, new farmland, and riches. None of that really panned out. And so it's a fairly conservative, Sunni, Arab, underdeveloped region.
Do you not really believe the Iraqis when they warn all parties in the Syrian conflict not to try to bring this conflict into Iraq because, you know, they're not taking sides? But do you think they are actually taking sides?
Oh, the Maliki government has taken sides with Assad and Iran against the Sunnis, and they're frightened because Saudi Arabia was mortified when America helped the Shiites to power and cast out the Sunnis from government in Iraq. They've been hoping for a Sunni win in Syria to counteract and to counterbalance the Shiite power in Iraq. And so they've been supporting rebels in Syria and have been in favor of a Sunni takeover of Syria in order to, in some ways, stick it to Shiite-run Iraq. And the Iraqi government has very close relations with Iran, has been shipping arms across Iraq. America has been upset by this but can't do very much about it and has been calling for the Iraqi government not to do it. But everybody knows it's taking place, I presume. And so the war is spilling over. And only a week ago, Maliki, the Iraqi premier, said that if the rebels win in Syria, it's going to be bad for Iraq. There's going to be more al-Qaeda and more civil war in Iraq.
Do you believe him?
Yeah, sure there will be. I think that's, you know, most analysts believe that Iraq is probably the country that will have the biggest spillover because there's so little peace and understanding between the sectarian groups in Iraq that to have a big shift in the sectarian balance in Syria is going to have repercussions in Iraq. The Sunnis were badly beaten by the Shiites because America, of course, de-Ba'athified, ripped out the Sunnis from the military. All the Ba'athis, most of them were Sunnis, were thrown out of their jobs. The Sunnis went on the warpath, joined al-Qaeda, and started killing Americans. We killed Sunnis in return and helped the Shiites to the top, where they've had their foot on the necks of the Sunnis ever since. The Sunnis don't like being down at the bottom of society, and they're looking to their Syrian brethren to help them get a bigger hunk of government, if not roll back the Shiites entirely.
Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. The rebels now hold parts of several major Syrian cities, including Aleppo in the north, suburbs of the capital, Damascus, and the central city of Homs. The gains are a significant blow to Mr. Assad's regime, which for 2 years has been battling an uprising that has escalated into a full-blown civil war. 94 people in the United Arab Emirates have gone on trial, charged with trying to overthrow their government. Rights groups have voiced concern over the fairness of the proceedings, pointing to a number of alleged irregularities. Philip Walter Wellman has details from Dubai.
The suspects include two prominent human rights lawyers, doctors, academics, and student leaders who were arrested throughout last year. The UAE government alleges they formed a secret network with links to the Muslim Brotherhood that aimed to carry out a coup and transform the Gulf state's relatively liberal society into a strict Islamist regime. Most of the defendants are believed to be part of the local Islamist group Al-Isla, which advocates a greater political voice for Emirati citizens. After the Arab Spring uprisings of 2011, the UAE sentenced five dissidents to prison after they campaigned for a more representative government. They were later pardoned by the president. Theodore Karasik, the director of research at the Dubai-based Institute for Near East and Gulf Military Analysis, says the UAE remains wary of regional unrest spreading to its shores.
What's important to understand is that the regional environment is creating hostile forces to many different countries in the region. And if the UAE authorities are seeing that there is any kind of sympathy for hostile forces, they're going to act against them.
Some of the 94 defendants who stood trial on Monday have been imprisoned for nearly a year. Rights groups say the accused, both men and women, have been denied due process. Rory Donaghy from the Britain-based Emirates Center for Human Rights says there's also strong evidence some were subjected to torture.
We are absolutely certain that the prisoners have suffered from severe maltreatment whilst in custody.
The UAE government denies the allegations. Philip Walter Wellman for VOA News, Dubai.
As U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry continues his trip to the Middle East, Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, and correspondent Scott Stearns sat down with Tara Sowenshine, the Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. They discussed some of the issues facing the Middle East and Africa. They asked, how will the United States tackle the proliferation of extremist Islamism?
The best answer is to counter violent extremism, either on the prevention end, which is before it's erupted, or manage it during periods of extremism, and then to stay engaged after extremism has unfortunately taken hold. So our approach to it is to counter it by providing an alternative narrative, particularly for young people, and particularly in places like the African continent where the youth bulge is so great. So you have to get to people and help them to see an alternative route: jobs, education, healthcare, all of the elements of human life that can dissuade you from the path of extremism and violence to something more meaningful, less divisive, less hostile, and more positive. To get online in contested space and correct misperceptions, and yes, to alternatively offer a different way of thinking and behaving.
The Center for Strategic Counterterrorism Communications is in Tara Sowenshine's jurisdiction.
The small group is the online countering violent extremism department, if you will, which goes on the internet every single day and reads often some very extremist commentary and takes it on head on, correcting facts, correcting misperceptions, explaining who we are and what we do. And so it's really pulling up our chair at the online table and saying, you have to take us into account. And the extremists don't like it, but every time they argue about why we're at the table, I say, let's pull up our chair again. We're making headway.
The undersecretary also discussed the U.S. effort to engage the people of Iran.
We have a virtual website that is an ability to project to individuals in Iran. Sometimes it's up and running in terms of getting through, sometimes not. We continue to have relationships through that website, and we continue to engage ordinary Iranian citizens. And so I am constantly amazed at how hungry people are everywhere for information about the United States. And we're eager to find out more about them. So once you're in that people-to-people environment, which my work is, there are just so many opportunities.
Tara Soenshine, the U.S. Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. Vice President Joe Biden says the United States is not bluffing about its determination to stop Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Biden delivered his remarks to delegates from AIPAC, the most powerful pro-Israel lobbying organization in the nation. VOA correspondent Meredith Buell has details from Washington.
More than 12,000 pro-Israel activists are in Washington for the annual conference of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC. Concern about Iran's nuclear program is topping the agenda. Vice President Joe Biden told the group that when it comes to Iran's nuclear ambitions, the U.S. position is clear.
It is to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon, period. Period. End of discussion. Period. Prevent, not contain, prevent.
Israel has threatened military strikes if Iran moves to develop atomic weapons. Tehran maintains its program is for peaceful purposes. Biden said a military option is on the table if diplomacy doesn't work.
Well, big nations can't bluff, and presidents of the United States cannot and do not bluff. And President Barack Obama is not bluffing. He is not bluffing.
Western nations are negotiating with Iran, but Israeli leaders warn that Tehran is using the talks to continue building its nuclear program. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke to AIPAC via satellite from Jerusalem.
Diplomacy has not worked. Iran ignores all these offers. It's running out the clock. It has used negotiations, including the most recent ones, to buy time to press ahead with its nuclear program.
AIPAC strongly backs the Israeli government both on Iran and the conflict with the Palestinians, but some Jewish groups are critical of that support. An organization called Jewish Voice for Peace unveiled 100 billboard ads in Washington's subway system saying AIPAC doesn't speak for its members. Alan Elsner is spokesman for J Street, another pro-peace Jewish group.
For those people who want to support Israel, who love Israel, but do not want to support every single policy of the Israeli government, who do not want to support the occupation, who do not want to support the settlements. And so we provide a place for those people to be.
On Tuesday, the final day of the AIPAC conference, thousands of delegates will head to Capitol Hill to lobby members of the U.S. Congress. Meredith Buell, VOA News, Washington.
Homosexuality in Turkey is legal, but remains highly contentious in the predominantly conservative Muslim society. Hate crimes are not unusual, oftentimes carried out by fellow family members. But a Turkish documentary called My Child is telling a different story. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
The gala night in Istanbul of the documentary My Child drew a packed audience. The powerful film tells the story of Listag, a parent support group of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender children, or LGBT. It follows a group helping fellow parents come to terms with their children's sexuality, as well as challenging prejudice in society. Director Can Candan hopes the film will help challenge traditional attitudes towards LGBT people.
We want to bring about change in this society, and we feel like this documentary could do that by bringing these stories of parents of LGBT individuals to a general public.
A leading newspaper made the film front page news, reporting positively on the parents' work. The Turkish media are more accustomed to reporting about attacks and even murders by parents or family of gay people. But Turkish society appears to be changing. Last year, Istanbul hosted its 20th Gay Pride Day, drawing a record attendance of thousands. Two women from the group were invited in June by the main opposition party to address a parliamentary commission. Metehan Özkan of the LGBT group Lambda, and who helped to set up Listak, says prejudice and hate crimes remains a common problem in Turkey. But he claims the Listak parents play a crucial role in challenging prejudices.
In one of the prides here, I've seen people saying, look at these faggots, they are again on the street. And then one of the guys said, oh, look at this. Someone is holding a sign, a placard, says, I'm your father, I'm next to you. Aha, this is something brave, he said, just right after he said faggots. So they are great icebreakers. They can manage to talk to people that we cannot sometimes directly talk to. This parliament visit, they shook hands with many MPs there, just saying, you know, look, I'm a mother. Do you have a child? Yes, I do. Okay, my child is gay and trans or whatever. So do something for my child.
Attending the opening of the documentary, Şule Ceylan, one of the members of the Listak delegation that visited Parliament, believes Turkey is moving in the right direction.
Kesinlikle bir şeyler değişti. Biz evet meclise gittik iki anne.
Surely things have changed. We went to Parliament as two mothers and we really startled them, she said. They showed a lot of interest in us. They see that these children are not coming from outer space. They are not freaks. They have mothers, families. They were impressed. We are here today, an incredible crowd, and I'm very, very excited. I believe there'll be more beautiful things happening. I can see that. In a packed cinema, the film was warmly received. Speaking to the audience, it's clear there is widespread recognition that the film is highlighting the important work of the parents.
It's not an activist film, actually. I really love the tagline of the film. It's a family film. They are the parents of those individuals. They love them. They are ready to die for them. They can do everything for their children, and they are doing it. I think it's a very courageous. It's very brave what they have done.
The documentary is being shown across Turkey, and in a special screening that was shown in neighbouring Armenia and in the Palestinian territory city of Ramallah. The hope of the filmmaker and the parents is that barriers can be continued to be broken down, not only in Turkey, but also eventually across the region. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul, Turkey.
This has been VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Join us Monday through Friday for news from the region and of interest to the region. And for more Mideast coverage, visit our website at MiddleEastVoices.com. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Thanks for joining us.